But today I'm jamming it in before work, which is what I never do.
Were you talking while I was gone? Did you say something funny?
Yeah, no. It's a lot of funny stuff.
Can't you just be funny on your own?
Yeah, no cold open today.
No cold open today?
Yeah, no cold open.
Don, do you sign off on that?
I do not sign off on that.
All right, well, you're up
there. I will sign you in right now.
Okay, Don.
Well, I don't have anything. I don't know. Cold open makes the show.
Don, I'm assuming that in between visits to our show, you just sit in the basement anticipating your next visit. So
there might be a grain of truth to that.
Like 6 weeks of just what can I open with?
So, and you know what? It's like I've got writer's block for those 6 weeks. I come back and it's just a blank slate. I've got nothing to give.
And welcome to episode 169 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany, and with me as always is
Adam, Vancouver.
And once again, we are joined by Don in
Barrie. As if like you need to say my name and then I have to say where I'm from.
Yeah, no.
I don't know how that works.
That's right. Well, where you're from is a name too. So we're looking for a Barrie from Don, Quebec.
Sure, let's go with that.
Man, I'm spitting out comedy gold today. Might be our funniest show, Adam.
Yeah, we're on pace.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Laugh a minute.
Oh, absolutely. I was hoping for less, or 30. See? Can we just do this over?
Yeah.
So what's going on, Don? Welcome back.
Oh, well, thank you for having me back. Geez, things have been so busy lately. Worked on my Snowflake a Day project through the entirety of winter. And while it's still snowing outside, I've kind of given up on that project. I hit day number 100, and now I'm off to do some other creative things.
I did see those. Now, why 100 days? Is that how long winter is in Ontario?
Well, I mean, it's a nice round number. I usually start on December 1st, and that ends up in mid-March somewhere. And so that's usually the heart of winter when we'll typically always have snow. Uh-huh. And so it's, you know, it's longer than the actual calendar season of winter is, but that's just the way it is here. So it was a fun project and led to a lot of very interesting things. This year, I've got some interesting connections and opportunities that came from my book project that launched and the whole Snowflake idea. I'm doing some filming and some work with CBC right now for an episode of The Nature of Things on the subject of snow. So I'm going to be a big part of that.
I've not heard of any of that.
No.
Is that a TV show or something?
Yeah. I'll send you a link when it's out there. If you have a TV anymore these days.
Absolutely. Well, no, I do. And it is actually one of my favorite shows. We love The Nature of Things. Did you meet David Suzuki?
No. He narrates the shows. He gets personally involved in a few of them, but I don't think he was involved in this one, at least not the parts that I'm involved in.
I think he takes a personal interest in the ones that are on Salt Spring Island.
Yeah.
I think. Which I think is right. I think he lives out there somewhere.
I guess it's more convenient and relaxing, and I don't blame him one bit. But when I've got time in front of the camera, and they've also asked me to get some footage of snow falling and that kind of stuff to slice into the episode as well. So it's an interesting combination of being both in front of the camera and film crew in behind as well.
Oh, they've asked you to shoot as well?
A little bit, yeah.
Oh, that's pretty impressive. All right, I'm looking forward to that. That's and my wife also loves that show. I introduced her to that show when we were in Canada, and she's a big fan.
Do we have a timeline on when that episode will be available?
Well, they're doing all the filming this winter, and they might still get me out into the field once more to do a bit more shooting, but it's only going to air next winter, at the beginning of next winter. They don't have a solid date yet, but it'll be the kickoff of the snow season. Oh, I will.
Great. That sounds like a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, and I've just been enlisted to participate in a TEDx talk as well at some point over the summer, and they're just gearing up for the promotional stuff with that. So I'm excited. Lots of fun stuff going on.
Are you going to be that skateboard kid with the long hair?
No.
You must have seen that one.
I did, yes.
Yeah, okay. What is your TED talk going to be?
Well, it's going to be... don't know how many details I can give out, but let's just say that it's on perspective and how, you know, photography can open us up to different perspectives in some very interesting ways. So it'll be fun.
Great.
And how did that come about?
I'm not entirely sure how they heard about me. I think the contact was first made when I was when I had an article in the Toronto Star, or like I had a guest spot on Global TV's morning show, and so I had a flurry of media activity around that same time. And I think that's when they got in touch. So,
and that's as simple as it is. They just get in touch and say, "Hey, you, would you like to do a TED talk?"
Yeah, well, TEDx. I'm not as illustrious to be like the full proper TED.
Right,
but,
right.
But no, so yeah, they got in touch. They seen my work. They saw sort of what the kind of stuff that I was doing. They may even have a copy of my book. I'm not sure. So now I've got to put together the entire, you know, proposal and start timing things out to make sure that I'm in my time frame. And now that my Snowflake project is done, I can sort of get back into the swing of things with all of these other projects that that will basically mean I won't have any free time like I had hoped.
Free time is overrated, Don.
Yeah, I guess so.
What would you have done with your free time?
You know what?
Exactly.
I'm not sure. I haven't had free time in such a long time. No. Now I wouldn't know what to do with my with myself if it ever arrived.
There's no such thing. And plus, let's be honest, you're in Barrie, so you can go throw rocks off the bridge. That's something.
Yep. Yep.
Yep.
Now we play a game where you try to hit car windshields.
Also fun. That's free time. Yep. Okay, so you don't need any. Good for you. Wow. I wrote down on the show notes, Don plugs, and I didn't know it'd be that many. That's awesome.
Well, there you go. Let's see. You're talking about what I did recently. Something else that's interesting photographically related is a couple of days ago, actually about a week and a half ago now, my stepsister got married. And so I was playing around with camera gear. I wasn't the official photographer, but I don't usually shoot people or weddings or that kind of stuff. So it was an interesting experiment in how it works. And I rented the Canon 85mm f1.2 lens for that occasion. And that was on my camera for most of the time. And my God, is that thing difficult to focus with. I mean, it's almost impossible when you're shooting wide open to get anything in focus. Mm-hmm. So that was a struggle and a challenge. But I think there's some pretty cool shots that came out of that, too. And I'm happy with it. Sort of reaching outside of the little box that I built for myself in nature and macro photography. It's kind of fun once in a while.
We were talking about that lens very recently on the show, when Amber was on the show, and she rents that all the time. Is that what we decided, Adam? I forget.
Yeah.
She rents that all the time. She loves that lens. From what I understand, it's very, very heavy.
Yep.
And everybody loves it. So it's just amazing.
It's sharp, it's crisp. Of course, it's got the benefit of shooting at f1.2, but, you know, most of the time I wasn't using it there. You know, shooting at f2.8, f4, doing group shots with it from a distance. It's got just a perfect field of view, for a lot of that type of work. And I'm not speaking from a great amount of experience, but I did enjoy how it was sort of feeling in my hands. Now, my camera is a 1DX, and it's a big, bulky camera paired with a bulky lens. You know, the lens doesn't overpower the camera in that sense. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of a nice couple, those two pieces of equipment together. And yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So was it difficult to focus at f4 as well, or just like all across all through the range?
Well, so here's an interesting thing that I realized as I was using this lens. The focusing screen inside most cameras that allow you to see exactly where the focus is falling and what the depth of field is, mm-hmm. Is only accurate to about f2.8 or so.
Okay.
And you can test this by pressing the depth of field preview button that most cameras have. I don't know if the Rebels or the lowest end cameras will have it, but everything above that will have a button usually around where the lens mount is. And if you press that, it stops the aperture blades down to whatever aperture you've got your camera set to. So if you've got it set to f8, you press the button, the aperture blades lock in place, and the image in the viewfinder gets visibly dimmer, but the depth of field gets greater so that you can preview where your depth of field is going to be. That button is ineffective at anything wider than f2.8. So it's basically saying that you can't see how shallow the depth of field is through the viewfinder at anything wider than f2.8. And that means that while it might look more in focus to you in the viewfinder, it will be less in focus than that when you actually take the shot. So I resorted to using LiveView for a lot of that stuff. And how goofy does this look with a big camera apparatus? I'm kind of holding it out in front of my face, trying to manually focus and zoom in on things. It worked. It was a good solution. But it was a learning experience, and you know, you find those technical challenges as you go along, and every area of photography has them. Especially if you haven't explored it, you get hit in the face with a lot of these challenges all at once, and you've got to sort through it.
Mm-hmm. It is kind of goofy looking like a $9,000 soccer mom.
Yes, it is.
But I've been resorting to live view an awful lot myself lately, just using manual focus and actually shooting with the tripod a lot more. I end up using it a lot for manual focus. It just comes in very, very handy. So there you go.
There you go.
Adam, Don.
Yes.
Both of you. You ever hear that TV show Breaking Bad?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Don's not part of this show, I don't think. So we're moving on from the Don plugs. Have you guys watched that show?
I watched the first two seasons.
Mm-hmm. And Adam?
About the same, yeah. I'm about two episodes left in the second season.
Okay, so yeah, we're my wife and I are watching that. Love the show, but there's one thing that is wickedly distracting to me. It's the lighting is good, but wow, is everybody top lit? Everywhere everybody walks, no matter what scene they're in, they're just perfectly lit from above. So everything's catch light cat or a kicker kicker kicker.
Okay.
Now I'm not going to be able to unsee that. Thank you for ruining a great show for me.
Yeah. Now here's where it gets really, really distracting is when they do the coverage and they'll shoot the wide shot and then cut into the close-up. In the wide shot, most times they just can't possibly top light the actors because you would see the lights.
Okay.
So in the wide shots, they're not top lit. And then you cut to the close-ups wickedly. And it's not even like it's subtle. It's just massively, massively top lit.
So. Wow, now that you mention it, that's going to be a permanent distraction.
Yeah.
Well, to me and to all of our listeners too, and I'm sure you'll get some hate mail for it.
I was hoping to nobody send us spoiler alerts because I'm not through all the way through the show yet either. We're in season four now though.
Okay.
And we are enjoying it. Except for that part. And my wife loves that I keep pointing it out. She's, oh good. Point that out for me. Other than that, it's a great show and very well edited. I've only spotted like two bad edits in the first three seasons, so you know.
Wow, you have a totally different level of enjoyment or lack thereof, I guess, when it comes to a show like that.
It's true. It's true. It's kind of one of the curse of being a jerk.
Yeah.
that's what you get. Did you shoot anything interesting this week? Adam, let's start with you.
I did for a change.
Oh, we were starting with you because I thought the answer was no.
No, I have one scenario that I've been, I shot last weekend, came off the ferry, was sort of looking at the digital SLR magazines on the boat, as I was coming back and forth between Victoria and Vancouver. And on the cover of one of the magazines, like to be honest, I'm not exactly sure which one it was because I looked at a few. They showed this product shot of a camera with kind of like a high tech kind of background done with blurred lights, and said, "You know, check out how to do this simply with your iPad." And read the article, and I thought it was pretty interesting, and sort of made some streaks of light on the iPad in Photoshop, and then used it as background lighting to a product shot, and then seemed pretty straightforward. It was a long exposure photo, and I thought, how can I possibly apply this to portrait lighting and use this as a quick way to create an interesting background for a portrait and do it all in camera rather than green screen or some other way? And so I tried it out. So I used the iPad. I made the purple bars across my iPad in Photoshop, and then used the softbox and a kicker light to light my subject. And it was like I used a 10-second exposure and tripped the lights in the first curtain, and had to crank the light because I wanted to get rid of all of the ambient light, because I was going to literally walk the iPad right directly behind the subject after in the 9.5 seconds following the flash exposure. So I wanted to make sure that I didn't show up in a 10-second exposure. So I think I shot at an F22 and a ISO of 100 over 10 seconds. And it worked really well. So I had to get the flash, the front key light really cranked. I think I was shooting on full power, like I want to say maybe 1.5 feet away from the subject in order to get the right exposure on the subject. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it created some cool effects. Definitely something that's worth playing around with.
F22, so, that's a lot to fill.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It looks good. Don, I sent you the link to the via email.
Yeah, I got it right here.
That we're talking about. Looks good. Looks like Tron. Looks like Tron to me at first.
Yeah, and anyways, I thought, well, I mean, I did this really quickly, and by quickly, I mean, I don't know, probably about 20 takes of me walking the light behind in order to kind of get what I wanted, and thought, hey, this someone should make a little trolley to move your iPad along, and then you could use this for product choice. I was thinking like a little skateboard or something apparatus to fix your iPad on, and then you could sort of roll it across, because that's the hardest part is, you know, getting the light to move exactly the way you want.
Oh, so but, you moved it horizontally so that there was no vertical blurring of the bars.
Right.
Gotcha. Because you couldn't just hold the iPad wasn't big enough to cover everything at once. You needed that movement, correct?
Right. Yes.
Could you use your television?
Good luck.
Why?
Well, my television's mounted up on the wall up high, so...
Yes, that will take a bit of an angle, but mine is not.
Yeah, I guess if you might be able to do that, absolutely. If you yeah, I'm sure there'd be a way to do that. I also thought there's a bunch of possibilities here for anybody who does like to take product shots. I mean, you could use multiple iPads, you could use your phone. I mean, you could do all sorts of neat things. You could wave it around or sort of do the sort of drawing light effects in the background if you so choose. But I just thought something I never thought of and really never done long exposure portrait lighting. And I don't think we've ever really talked about it, but I think there's a lot of cool possibilities from just long exposure portrait lighting.
Absolutely.
So there you go. There was something different outside of the box. And Don, I saw another article, this is something that maybe you've tried before, about a simple macro setup that sounded interesting, where you take a clear container, fill it with some water and oil, vegetable oil or whatever, and then place it up on a stand so that you can shoot through it, and then you put different pieces of different colored cardboard or construction paper in behind it. And then I guess it really, they showed some sample images in the magazine, but you get all sorts of neat color combinations. And I guess because of the way the oil reflects the light and you use the colored paper as the background, it looked pretty cool.
I've seen a lot of techniques like that. There's a lot of different variations on it. And to be honest, I haven't tried many of them myself. It's something that I should, though. It becomes abstract artwork at that point. And
right.
So I kind of like to show something, and I like to learn from a subject. If I'm photographing an insect or a snowflake or water droplets and that kind of stuff, there's something more real about those kinds of images. And that's not to say anything against abstract photography. In fact, I've done a little bit of it myself, but I just haven't been enticed to jump right in and explore it. But maybe I should. It does look like it would be enjoyable.
Well, there's nothing wrong with having sort of your niche of what you like to do. And you kind of stepped outside of that, taking the wedding, the people pictures. See, for me, it is people pictures is my favorite. And every once in a while, I have to force myself to take, stuff like Adam's talking about here. So I understand exactly what you're saying.
And I agree wholeheartedly, because the whole article was about shooting product photography, and I twisted it into how can I use it for portrait photography.
Right. And yourself, Don, did you shoot anything interesting?
In the last week, I did a little bit of video work. So we were talking about CBC earlier, and we had a pretty good snowfall with bigger snowflakes about a week ago exactly. And so I was out with my macro setup, zoomed into an extreme magnification like 5:1, which is about 5 times closer than the average macro lens would get. and I'm focusing in on a single snowflake against a black background, and I'm moving a flashlight over top of it to change the angle of the light that's hitting it so that it will sort of glisten and glow and shine in different ways as the light hits different facets and bounces the light back to the camera. And it worked pretty well. Very hard to get solid, clear shots, even though there's very little wind in that kind of scenario. Mm-hmm. At that level of magnification, so much as breathing on the camera is going to shake the frame a little bit.
Absolutely.
So, I did a bit of that kind of fun stuff. And then, of course, the photo challenge for this week was done late last night.
Yeah, of course, as it always is. Now, when you're shooting these kinds of video for the show, how much are they expecting? How many minutes are they expecting of footage?
Well, they gave me no requirements whatsoever for that. They're asking me basically for B-roll stuff that they could slice in. So when I'm making a clip, I'll make each clip maybe a minute to 2 minutes long, depending on what I'm doing, so that they have room to cut on either side. And clearly, they won't use that much footage uncut. They'll take a smaller chunk of that. So I make sure that they have enough room to choose exactly which segment they're after, and give lead time on either side of that to make the editing process easier. I'm not sure exactly what their process is going to be, but I'm just trying to give them as much as I can so that it's useful to them.
And are you just handing over like the raw files, like the H.264 or whatever it records in?
Yeah, so I'll send it's being recorded in the highest format that camera can do, which is 1080p, and so they get just the raw data so that they can use that in whatever editing program without any compression or re-encoding or anything that could possibly reduce the quality.
Actually, they're likely going to expand it, I would guess.
I would imagine so, yeah.
I don't edit in I'm not sure what the 1DX records in. I'm sure it's a version of H.264. It does a smaller compression than the 5D Mark II, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, so you've got two compression options within that, IPB and All I. And correct. So for those that aren't in the industry, the latter of them compresses things less, so you have larger file sizes, and theoretically that means higher quality. But it's hard to see in practice.
Especially with what you're shooting, I think you probably will notice. Although everything is getting so good now, it is very difficult to notice. But you'll notice it usually in the blacks, it tends to not break up as much and turn blocky. And this is getting very technical. Adam, are you still awake?
I'm drinking coffee, yeah, so I'm happy.
Wonderful.
No, I stopped listening a while ago.
Are you shooting 29.97 or 23.96, 9.8?
29.97. I figure I'd give them as much as I can.
Right. Right. I guess especially for B-roll, it doesn't really matter. They can always slow it down or whatever they want.
Right. And, it was funny, though, because when they were filming me, when they had the setup they did a segment where they were shooting me photographing snowflakes, and they were shooting with a Red Epic. So it makes my little camera and my footage look pretty dinky in comparison, because that's 5K video footage.
It is. However, you don't believe the hype.
No, but there's far more data. And so, sometimes you see it in shows and sometimes it's more noticeable than others when you see, when they've zoomed in on a certain piece of footage and you can see that the quality gets lower because of that, especially when people are using high speed cameras and things that don't have the higher resolutions. They do that on, Mythbusters and things like that, where you can see the different cameras have different qualities. And so you notice that when you look at all of these different pieces that get put together, and some people do it so well that you can't tell, and I'm sure that they'll do something similar. But
sure. No, and the Red Epic is fantastic, and all these cameras are great, but remember that so is the 1DX and so is the 5D Mark II, believe it or not. If you know what you're doing and kind of put it in the right parameters, you're going to get amazing footage.
Even the cheapest Rebel is far better than what production studios would have used 10 years ago.
Yes,
and so it's amazing to see how fast this is evolving and giving high professional quality video gear to just about everybody.
It's becoming very, very accessible. I was talking on the show a couple of weeks ago. I bought the cinema lens from Rokinon, and just can't believe how. It wasn't cheap, but I can't believe how cheap it was. Like it is amazing.
I was looking at the Canon cinema lenses for the EF system, just to throw in any camera, just to see what their prices are. And the prices start at like $7,000 or $8,000, yeah, and they go up from there. You know, one of the big lenses that Canon is missing in their lineup that Nikon has is the 14-24. And they have a lens that's very similar. It's a 14.5 to 30 something, but it's a cinema lens. So I looked up, well, you know, that'll work. How much does it cost? And it costs like $45,000.
Right.
You know, that's more than a down payment on a house. And so I'm, you know, definitely is not it? Going to buy that.
But. You don't live on the West Coast, my friend.
No, I don't.
I think that's the real estate fee on a house on the West Coast. Adam, you're on the West Coast. Never mind.
Yeah. Moving on.
You're asleep on the West Coast.
No, lenses, cinema lenses.
We're done. We're done with that. Yeah. I like mine for, I think, what's the price in North America? $450, something like that? $450? Sure. Fantastic. I love it. I love my Rokinon. It's the Volimex here, but that's the same lens. And I haven't had as much opportunity to shoot with it as I would have liked by now, but moving forward in the spring and summer, I hope to get a lot more use out of it. So it's great. And the irony being that it's not as sharp as other lenses, and that's a good thing for video. So, sort of. There you go. My interesting stuff. I shot some merchandise photography for my baseball team.
Great.
So that's it. Maybe so. I take that back. Not interesting.
When you say merchandise, you mean like branded gloves and things and hats, or
T-shirts, hoodies, like a Letterman jacket kind of thing. They're trying to move a lot of units and help fund the team. So basically for fans, if you want to buy, you know, a Tubing and Hawks T-shirt or whatnot. So I said, yeah, I'll definitely go shoot that for the website. And basically, you know, I went online and decided who to model it after, and who better than the Gap. I've always liked the Gap's ads. And so I sort of shot something similar to that. And it's not that... It's not tremendously groundbreaking. It was just like a white wall, but in order to shoot those sorts of things, that's what I did. So,
and it turned out well. I see.
It turned out well. I was very happy with the results. Although, as I mentioned, I put together that one little picture that I don't think I can publish anyways. But I compared the two very fit, very athletic girls to one of the Gap ad models, and was sort of astounded by the difference and how silly it is, and how she's weighs about half of what these girls weigh.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting divide. I'm looking at the picture right now, and it's almost scary looking at the Gap model. I mean, yes. That's not natural.
No, because these two girls are absolutely very fit. There's no way you'd ever consider them to be big at all. And then you compare them to this, and it's like, yikes. So...
Right, I agree. The pose might slightly enhance it though as well.
Could be.
The hips are turned. You know, your model's hips are more square, the curving. I mean, you're right. You're absolutely right. But I think it's slightly exaggerated from the angle of the photos.
Valid point.
That's it. That's my two cents.
This week's photo challenge, Adam. You this was your idea.
Yes, something new.
Something new.
Yes, you could, you wide open. You can make your interpretation as you choose.
So where did you come up with this? Why something new?
I don't know. It was a challenge we hadn't done, and you keep rehashing old challenges, so I thought we'd do something new.
Oh, okay. So, wonderful.
I was trying to kick you in the teeth at the same time as explain what the challenge was.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we're good then?
Yeah. Two birds, one stone. Good job, buddy. Well done. All right. Well, let's have a look. Let's go with the guest first, of course.
Okay. I don't have his.
You do. It's in the folder.
And I emailed it as well.
Yeah. So you have it twice, Adam.
All right. What's it called?
Two Hosers Challenge Something New. And I think he called it something new because it was the category you came up with.
Yes.
And
okay,
then
there it is.
Two Hosers, because that's our show. And the challenge, because it was the challenge.
I have it up now.
Thanks for being confusing, Don.
Yeah.
I'll try harder next time.
Yeah. So there you go.
based on the concept of something new and our topic of the show, which we haven't mentioned yet, is a technique.
Hang on, Adam.
Yes,
we're going to talk about ring lights later.
Great,
that's our show topic. Okay, you're right. Even Adam didn't know this the show topic. Okay.
This technique is called a Jarvie window, named after the photographer that kind of thought up this creative technique, Scott
Bob
Jarvie.
Window?
And so basically what this is a fisheye lens with a ring flash stuck in front of it, and the light pointed outwards to a subject, in this case me, that's grabbing into the ring light and putting their face up very close to that to the ring light as well, to be the only thing that's illuminated and the background falls off to black.
All right. Love it. I have seen this before. In fact, I saw this yesterday. Not your picture, but is this something that is this a thing?
This is a thing. This is a fad or a trend or something, and it's so easy to do that you know, it's very approachable for a lot of people that want to do something really outside the box compared to what regular portraiture and what have you would be. Now, I'm using an actual ring flash for this, but oftentimes you use one that modifies a regular flash into a ring type of light that's a bit bigger. So mine was a little bit smaller than most of these are usually used for, so I was feeling a little bit cramped. But that was just outside on my driveway. And if you remember the last time I was on, my challenge photo was also photographed on my driveway. The Snowflake Man picture, the movie poster thing that we had done.
Right.
So that seems to be my preferred location for your challenge photos.
Well, the commute's pretty good.
Yeah, the commute's great. And so I kind of like the way that it turned out. I'd never tried to do any of these before. You know, I'd seen them done. And so I knew the technique. But it was a fun experiment.
Great. I like it. Now, how did you get focus?
So I just experimented a little bit. The shot is done at f/16 because I knew that I wanted to have my fingers in as much focus as possible, but they were so close to the front of the lens that the depth of field would be kind of tricky to work with, even though fisheye lenses generally have a huge depth of field to begin with. So I set it to the smallest aperture that I could. And then did a couple of test shots with my fiance, who was a willing test subject, to try and get the distance proper while I set manual focus. And then she's the one that triggered the shot when I was in front of the camera.
Nice. You have to be careful of... Go ahead, Adam.
Well, I was going to say, you're married now, right, Don? You got married. Nope. Oh, you're not married yet.
I just said fiance, so unless I got married this morning.
No, I wasn't listening, so sorry. I missed that part. Okay, am I the only one that's looking at this and thinking, okay, when you have a child, this is the first shot they're going to get of you?
You are the only one thinking that, yes.
No, I'm absolutely not.
Well, not anymore. Now I'm thinking it.
All right, yeah. I'm done.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. I'm not a doctor, but the symmetry is amazing.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I can't be. I guarantee you, I can't be the only one that's thinking that.
Well, okay. Now, is this how you gave? Were you that involved? I mean,
no.
We hired a doctor. Yeah.
All right. I'm done.
If the wedding is still on, we're getting married at the end of August.
Okay, after this, don't let her hear the show. Okay, great. Adam, okay.
Yes.
I need to reset now. I had something else to say about, I don't know, now I got nothing.
All right.
Adam, let's see yours. Now, what is something new here? We got a triptych, I think.
What's a triptych?
Doesn't that mean like a little three pictures in a row?
I thought it was pronounced triptych.
Yeah, but over here I like to glam it up a little bit.
Okay, just to make it confusing.
I think it is triptych. Either way, no one's hearing that and going, yeah, Alan nailed it.
Well, something new for us is it was Jack's birthday this past weekend. And so his birthday present this year, rather than toys or anything, was an experience. So I bought Canucks tickets. So he went to his first ever Canucks game. Okay. So the triptych was sort of the before, during, and after the game. So I had three photos. So the first one, we got there early so we could watch warm up. And that was Jack drinking his giant Ryan Kessler drink. Mm-hmm. And then the during was the middle photo, which I'm sitting directly beside him. So I'm trying to hold the camera as far away from me as possible in order so that it can grab focus. And because it's very dark in there during the game, you know, the light is mostly coming on the ice. So I had to shoot it at, I think, an f1.8 with my 50 millimeter lens at, it might even be a 1.6 at like an ISO of like 5,000 in order to have enough light to see him. And again, in the last photo was after the game. So the Canucks had won and we came out and they were playing, like there was a drummer out there playing music and he was dancing around and flexing and stuff, celebrating, so to speak. So I grabbed a photo of him in his celebration, his post game celebration in the little Canuck Plaza out front.
So what did you say? I heard something about the Canucks won. I assume they lost 6-1?
No. They won.
Wow. Victorious.
Yeah. So it was good. It was a good game. 4-2, the Canucks won. They actually scored some goals, too. So that was good.
Wow. Great.
Yeah. So that's it.
Looks good. I like it. Now, were you sitting lower bowl, upper?
We were at the very lower part of the upper bowl. I think we're in the third row of the upper bowl. Okay,
so that is
it was dark. Good seats. What's that?
That wasn't the issue. I that is dark.
Yes.
You get a lot of fall off up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Looks good. And he had a good time, looks like.
What's that? Oh, yeah, we had a great time. That's it. I wanted to show that.
Okay. Moving on then.
All right.
This one's mine. We'll go with number one, gray t-shirt.
Okay.
Now, these are the new t-shirts. Something new is the new t-shirts. That I grab these while we're doing our product shots, which I may or may not publish the product shots. I don't know when they're supposed to go live. So if you're hearing this show next on Monday, these may or may not be on the site, and so then I'll publish them. But in the meantime, I decided to grab a couple of sort of, I don't know, a little more intense shots of these, because these aren't going to sell a lot of t-shirts. But I decided, hey, I have some people I don't normally shoot in my living room, so I shot these ones. There you go.
And so what was your thought process between the regular product shots switching to this? Like, what was the impact that you were going for here? Because I love the lighting, but was there a particular reason besides just being different?
I tend to like the this is lit with one light. The product shots are all white background. Those are lit with three lights. I use two lights to rake across the background on my wall to make it basically a white background. And then I was lighting those with one flash in an umbrella just to bathe the subject in light and basically make it light and breezy and, you know, accessible. Try to sell t-shirts. For this one, what I ended up doing is I turned off the backlights, and I happen to like the darker background. That's just my own personal preference lately. And I put on the gridded softbox that Adam and I both use to control the light a little bit more, because I wanted something I wanted it soft but a little more directional and keep it off the background. And I also moved it around further around to the side so we'd have a much darker side of the face. And I just wanted something a little more moody. And this is just kind of what I like, the contrast against the dark background.
I like it.
So that's it.
Mm-hmm. Well executed.
And I kept both of them because there was two girls and two guys that had come over to show off the different clothes and model the different clothes. And I knew I was going to use one of the girl shots, and then I couldn't decide which one. So, you know, girls, man, when they get excited about something, you want to include them both.
Right.
Yeah, I don't want to hear about it later. These are two girls from the softball team, by the way. Had I explained that?
No, you didn't.
Okay. Our baseball team is actually a whole bunch. It's a big club in Tübingen. And so there's multiple baseball teams, and there is a softball team as well. And so they came over, and they're modeled the girls' clothing. A couple guys came over and modeled the guys' clothing. That seems like a reasonable way to do it. And
is that the most popular sport in Germany? Is it baseball?
No, quite the opposite. It's quite the opposite.
Well, in your own little pocket, it kind of seems that way, but
no, even still, that this is where I come in, where I'm trying to make it a little more visible. Not necessarily popular, but a lot of people don't know that it exists. Despite the fact that there are seven teams in our little, and we're in a relatively small town, and we play against, you know, big cities, like the first teams do. The top Bundesliga team plays against Munich, for example, and other cities, and so they have a much, you know, broader population to choose to select from and have come out of the games. We don't have that. So my goal here is to sort of spread that around and make sure people know that we exist. So there you go. So something new in this is the T-shirt. The end.
Great.
Okay. Moving on. This week's topic, Adam, we're going to talk about ring lights.
Okay.
And I thought of this because Don said, hey, I want to be on the show. And I thought, well, what does Don know about? But, you know, lots of things. The answer is a lot of things. But I know he shoots with ring lights a lot because of the macro. I wanted to hear a little bit more about that. And because it's kind of making the transition, or has made, I guess, the transition into portrait photography. So let's talk a little bit about that. What are the origins of a ring light, Don?
I don't know.
Really?
where a ring light comes from? I mean,
what was the original purpose?
Well, I mean, for
I'll give
me
you a hint. It's medical.
My work.
I'll give you a hint. It's medical.
Well, you know, you look at magnifying glasses, and I can see a lot of, you know, when you've got a big magnifying, like if you've got some sort of surgical equipment and you have a magnifying glass, you want to have the light immediately around that. So you would have a ring of lights on the underside of a magnifying glass apparatus, mm-hmm. and that would give you nice, even light immediately below where you're looking at so that you can see everything that you need to without shadows casting and obscuring your view into certain areas of it. Okay, was that the answer you were looking for?
You just hinted on something that I think I should have asked first. What is a ring light? And you told us a little bit about that. What is a ring light?
A ring light is a light that is in a ring, as the name implies. It typically will, you know, in photographic terms, you can either have a complete continuous ring, or you can have two banks of lights that are sort of in a semicircle format. And these are usually mounted on or near the end of a lens, such that the light source is immediately where you're going to be photographing. So if I'm right. doing macro work, then my light is coming into exactly where my subject is.
Okay, but so if you didn't have that, like let's say you just had using a macro setup, and you just had like a camera mounted flash, what would be the downside there?
Two downsides. One being that depending on how long your lens is and where your subject is, your lens itself might cast a complete shadow over your subject. If you can figure out the angle of light, that light is not going to hit anywhere near where your subject should be.
Right.
So you need to move the location of the light down to a more convenient area for that photograph. So that's one of the main reasons why you shouldn't, at least for macro work, use a top-mounted light. Now, there's ways around that. I mean, you can use, like I've used a Pringles can to, you know, funnel the light down to right where the end of the lens is, and that works better than you might think.
Well, you're singing Adam's song right now.
Oh, yeah, I love the Pringles can.
Yep.
And so the ring flash is sort of the commercial version of that. Now, There's a downside to it, though, in that if you have anything spherical, so like you know, the shell of a ladybug or a water droplet or an eye, the reflection from the flash will be circular, and that will end up on your subject. Now, sometimes that can be a cool effect, especially with certain eyes, but in other cases, it can be a distracting element, and it can pull away from the subject itself.
Okay. So it's my understanding that this photographically, like that the whole ring light thing did initiate in the medical industry. Someone decided, hey, I want to take really, you know, close up pictures. Well, you can figure out medically what that would be, but I want to take close up pictures of that, and that's what we need it for. And then it quickly transitioned into just regular macro photography, and that's where you use it the most, correct?
That's where I use it almost exclusively, aside from the challenge photo that was something new, first time I tried that. Uh-huh. And so when I'm working in the field, there's so many variables in macro photography to keep in mind. Like if you're doing studio stuff, that's a different story. It's more controlled. But if you're just sort of out and trying to photograph insects, maybe even insects in flight, and you're just trying to find your subject, you don't want to have to worry about also holding an off-camera flash to get the light where it needs to be, because that's just one extra element of uncontrol, where you have to try and juggle that in and around your subject. And macro photography is a lot of chance. The more skill you have, the better your chances, but there's still chance. And so a ring flash can help simplify that equation and help you build up better images. The reflective properties with the weird reflections in the subjects means that sometimes I do use an off-camera flash instead, but the ring flash is usually what I go to first until I have any problems.
When you're shooting snowflakes, are you using off-camera or ring light?
Exclusively a ring flash for all of my snowflake work.
Uh-huh. Okay. At somewhere along the line, somebody made the transition and said, "Hey, listen, like this looks great, but can I use a ring light for portrait photography?" And I don't know who that person was. Adam, do you know who that was?
No.
Oh, nobody does. But it made the jump. And so now it's becoming, it has become very popular. Now, part of that is probably, I'm imagining the prices of ring lights has come down, and basically the alternatives, like you said, the Pringles can. Like there are things that you can build or buy that are an alternative to it.
Oh, and you can buy little plastic adapters that don't cost a whole lot that will basically be a commercialized Pringles can that funnels the light down from where your flash is into a plastic ring around the end of your lens.
Right.
And I've seen some great images made with those. A lot of the Jarvie window shots that I was mentioning earlier are made with that kind of a ring flash, at least for the weird close-up effect. But that kind of technique, that kind of soft, direct light can work very well in portraiture. And you get that very strange catchlight in somebody's eye as well that might be unexpected. And so that grabs your attention.
Absolutely. Now, before I get to the catchlight part, what effect does having that ring of light around, basically on axis, what effect does that have?
It's on axis, so what that means is even if the flash is not that diffused, shadows will start to disappear because the light is bouncing directly into the subject and then directly back to the camera, and so any shadows that are cast will happen behind the subject, and thereby they would not be picked up by the camera. Whereas if the flash was off even just by a little bit, if you've got say the flash on the top of the camera, like a pop-up flash, it's higher than the lens, so you'll get a shadow underneath somebody's chin by using that kind of a technique. So shadow reduction is one of the reasons why you'd want to use a ring flash.
But it doesn't have the same effect as necessarily just blasting the light. You know when you have the flash on camera, besides the shadow part, where you're just throwing the light right in someone's face, it can be very harsh.
That's right.
And I've noticed with the ring light, that effect is much reduced.
Because the flash has a larger surface area. So the light is not coming from a single point. So that one point of light is not as sharp in somebody's eyes. And so a ring flash would then, by that nature, have the same amount of light hitting the subject, but the source is spread out over a larger area. Uh-huh. And so it could be less distracting or less likely to make people blink and that kind of thing.
Now, I've seen this, the first, not the first spot, but one of the places I've saw it used very, very well is a guy named Gregory Heisler. Do you know who he is?
Nope.
Adam?
Yes.
Okay. He's got a book out called, was it 50 Portraits, I think it's called. I meant to talk about this on the show when I got the book back in November, and every week I just forget.
He photographs a lot of famous people.
Yes, he does, and quite well, as a matter of fact. If you haven't seen the book, I would recommend. I don't know what it's selling for now. It was selling for an unbelievable price of, I think, $25 when I bought it in November, which was about a quarter of what it should cost. Like, it's an amazing, amazing book. If you even have a passing interest in portrait photography, I recommend getting it because you will learn something. Not a very technical book. Very, very light on the technical stuff. But he does talk about using a ring flash in one or two of the photos, which I found very, very interesting and very well done. But he talks a lot about can I say technique without being technical? I don't think it's more about the artistic technique than the actual give me the f-stop kind of thing. But he uses it to the ring light to great effect. Now I think he was talking about using it as a fill, but I see a lot of people using the key light or the ring light as a key now, which I guess is what you did. I guess it's a key if it's the only light.
That's right.
In yours. But what he's doing, and what I saw, I think David Hobby, the strobist, is doing it, is occasionally using ring light, or he talked about using ring light as just a fill light, just a little flick, and it's a great technique. I have seen it in video. It sort of made the transition into video as well, because people are making these LED ring lights that you can get. And there was a documentary, the 30 for 30 series?
I can't say that I do.
Yes.
Adam, it's all sports stuff. It's not actually a very good title. It should be like, at this point, 50 for 32. But the idea was ESPN will produce 30 films for its 30 years on the air. They've gone way past 30 now, though.
I think now it's 30 a year. Like, they produce 30 each season of it.
Yes, yes.
And 30 different directors, too. That's part of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. But there was one, I don't know if you saw the one about the Little League baseball team. All grown up now. But the guys who went to the Little League World Series in, I don't know, 86. I don't remember. But I think all of the interviews with the grown-up ball players were all shot with a ring light. And I found it very distracting, because it was used as a key light, essentially. And it was sort of, you could kind of feel that something was off.
And you could see circles in their eyes? Like, was that a visual thing that was present?
Absolutely. Now, when you say circles in your eyes, we talked about catch light. What should a catch light look like, first of all?
Well, I mean, the natural catch light that I guess we're programmed to see would be the sun, right? Uh-huh. So it would be a single tiny light point, maybe a starburst or something like that. But if you're dealing with flash, I mean, oftentimes it would be the shape of the flash head. And so if you're using a circular flash modifier, or even just a flash on the top of your camera, it's going to be a tiny little rectangle. So almost like a little light point. But whatever the shape of the flash is going to reflect into somebody's eyes. So whether the sun, you know, tiny little circle and what have you. But a ring flash will be a circle, because that's the shape of the flash. So if it's a still ring flash, like the kind I use for macro photography, you would have two semicircles appear in somebody's eye, kind of like what you see in my challenge picture, but it's mm-hmm. broken up a little bit because my hands are covering part of the flash. And if you're using some of the larger ring flashes, also called a beauty dish in some ways, then you'll get almost a full circle catch light in the center of somebody's eye, or maybe off center a little bit, depending on where they put the ring. And that is distracting to me. I mean, you see that, and it takes away from the beauty of the shot, in my opinion. And that's why I typically don't use it when eyes are involved. Some people love the effect, but it's sort of a love it or hate it thing, I guess.
I find it, I love the effect when the photo is about that. If you're trying to draw attention to the eyes looking odd, then I do like it in a way. But if you're just trying to get a well-lit subject, it is, to me, it is wildly distracting. Now, friend of the show, Dwayne Gervin, uses a similar effect, doesn't he, Adam?
Sometimes, yeah, he has, but usually it's done with models that are all done in funky makeup, and again, it's kind of an added effect to an already sort of very specific stylized look that he's going for.
He's who came to mind when I said, you know, I very much like it, because the ones what he has, like the girls who are painted,
yeah,
and then he doesn't use a ring light necessarily. I mean, I guess it's a big ring. What does he use?
I'm not exactly sure what he uses to for the effect, but yeah, he uses flash modifiers to create very interesting catch lights. Sometimes he uses, you know, like a long sort of halogen lights in a apparatus that he's built to create long sort of strips through the eyes of light. So yeah, I think he uses like, you know, two lighting fixtures that each have four long halogen light tubes in it, and then he uses those for catch lights.
Gotcha.
But I think he has used kind of a neat sort of a self-made ring light also to create circular, you know, different circular catch lights in the eyes.
I'm certain he made one out of fluorescent tubes.
Well, that's the for the long sort of strip catch lights in okay. the eyes.
Gotcha. Yeah. So there you go. So what my point was, when it is overdone, in the case of the 30 for 30 documentary, I found it overdone, wildly distracting. I think it's just not, it wasn't a good choice. It is interesting though, and I guess how do you make, sometimes if your subject isn't tremendously interesting, you have to compensate for that by being, you know, forcing us to be interested, I suppose. And that's a situation where you might do that. But other than that, I do like the effect when done correctly. So, what is
that to be, I'm just going to jump in there and say one further thing, when you're using a ring flash, you are typically removing shadows. And while that can be something that you're trying to do for the aesthetics of the image, shadows really help define photographs as well. So a ring flash is designed against that aesthetic of having shadows define things. So it's not going to suit everybody, including like even in the macro and the flower world, you want shadows to bring out some of those textures and those details. And it's harder to get that with a ring flash. It's a different type of technique that is really worth exploring, but don't expect it to replace something that you're already doing that already works well.
Right. The reason Angelina Jolie looks so good when shot with the ring flash is because she's Angelina Jolie.
Exactly.
Write that down, Adam.
Okay, got it.
Great. Challenge for next week.
Don't say ring flash.
Oh, you don't want to do it?
I don't have a ring flash. You want me to make one?
No. Do you want to make one?
I don't
really
flash?
Want to do one, but I think we have a little time this week. I don't have a ring flash, but you know what? Let's do a homemade ring flash. That's our challenge this week.
Great.
Yeah, you said it. It was your idea.
No, I said don't do a ring flash.
We're gonna do it.
Okay.
We're doing it. Homemade ring flash.
All right.
Love it, Adam. Love it.
Okay.
Dawn.
Yeah.
Where can people find your stuff? And people, I don't think I mentioned it. Can people still buy your book?
Yes, absolutely. And I would encourage you to do so.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up.
So my book, Sky Crystals, it's a great, 300-page hardcover book on snowflakes. Tons of photographic stuff in there, but also tons of science, too. So it's,
I think tons is underestimating how much science is in there, Don.
It's about 100 pages of science and 100 pages of photography techniques and that kind of stuff. So you can get that at skycrystals.ca. And of course, the links to that and everywhere else that you'll find me online is at doncom.ca.
And we're going to put a link to that on our website. Adam.
Yes.
What about you? Where are you selling your book? Over at Schwartz Chronicles?
I should sell it. I have to write it first.
You have to write it. That's the hard part.
I have to have something interesting to write beyond that. So I think I could probably come up with 10 pages of what I've done since high school.
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe 20 pages.
Well, double spaced, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And yeah, yeah. Really big font. Like what? 18 font?
And a lot of really, really's in there.
Yeah.
Yes.
So anyways, Two Hosers, that's where you can find Two Hosers Facebook and the twohosers.com website when you post stuff that is from the podcast.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And I can't believe I hadn't liked your Facebook page. I just did that right now.
Wow.
Oh God, it's just fantastic. You know what? We're just climbing every day. We're climbing.
The fact that you haven't liked our page has been eating at me.
No. Now you can sleep well at night.
Yeah, I'm going to unlike it, you jerk. Yeah. That's what's going to happen. Yeah, I'm. When it comes to a comparison between who's better at social media, you win.
Well, I suppose.
But, you are. Wow, what are you past it? What are you, 1.5 million people?
Close to it. Like, something like that, if you add them all up together.
Which is kind of the point.
Well, I mean, you know, Google Plus, Facebook, Twitter, you know, you add all the different social media networks up, then yeah, I guess it's a big number.
It is.
There's other ones beyond Facebook?
Yes.
Oh.
Our MySpace page is just tearing up the internet. That and Friendster. We're doing pretty well. We're doing pretty well over there. Great. Check my stuff out at alanatridge.com or the two of us at twohosers.com, where you can find all the links and all the photos you need. That's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.